Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, it's Vlad Harris here with another Panther Rants podcast. It's Thursday, almost end of the week. We're getting there. We're just limping to Friday. I think for me, for instance, I've been out the last few days. Family was in town. It's just tiring, man, when your family comes in for a few days, because you're just running around, sometimes nonstop, and this and that, and then you get back to work and you're tired. That's how I am right now. Tired. But on top of that, I went new car shopping and was hoping to get myself a deal with the same dealer and the same salesman that I had, because I wanted to be, do the loyalty thing. And it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, and that's pretty much what happens with when you go car shopping, is that a lot of times, if you think it's too good to be true, it is going to be too good to be true, and you just end up with going back to square one. And it's like, then the salesman goes, "Well, why didn't you do business with me this time?" I said, "Well, we were such buddies last time, and now you're trying to screw me." But oh well. Anyways, not really much going on sports wise. NBA fun. Well, Stanley Cup, Caps up 3-1, so it looks like they're going to be pretty much closing out that series. And Ovi gets his first Stanley Cup, which was bound to happen sooner or later. But I'm not sure, though. Is the next game on NBC Sports Network? Or on NBC, or just on NBC? Because that's a big question, because my thing is, if the Caps be an expansion team in the Stanley Cup Finals to win the Stanley Cup on NBC Sports Network, did it really ever happen? I mean, think about that. I'm sure the Caps fans will take a Stanley Cup any way they can get it. And I'm sure this is one of those ways. You have to be an expansion team. Who, to their credit, they were very good this year. And, they had a goaltender, played out of his mind. But unfortunately, this series, it hasn't worked out for him. And on top of that, he hasn't had much help either on the, score sheet. NBA Finals, it's a wash. It's 3-0. It's done. The Cap, it looked good early on. And I thought the Cavaliers would steal at least one game. And game one looked like the game one was for a taking. And LeBron had a hell of a game, but once J.R. Smith did what he did, it pretty much killed the rest of the series. Although this game here, they just played, they had a chance to come back. Other than game two, Cavs have been in it for both of those, games one and three. It just, Golden State's a really good team. They're loaded. They got four guys that could be a VP on that team, or in the league in general. They got four really good guys. You know, and Draymond, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, they got through a draft. But they get accused of building a super team because they pick up Kevin Durant. And really, he's just one player. So, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, LeBron supposedly in the offseason may talk to Golden State. Not sure how they'll make room for him cap-wise, but it could happen. I mean, not to mention LeBron does have, you know, he does have real estate on the West Coast. I think in L.A., though. But who knows? We'll see. I mean, the guy's approaching his mid-30s. I just can't see him going anywhere else. But maybe finishing his career in Cleveland. But you know, you never know. Then, of course, we have the Eagles getting disinvited to the White House. And, you know, my little take on that is it really doesn't. We're getting to a point where pretty much where teams are not going to be going to the White House for a while. I think the whole thing is, you know, it used to be you visit the president, but now it's given who we put in office. It's just the situation's toxic. You know, when the Astros and Pens won their respective championships and the Patriots, the big debate was whether they would go to the White House or not. And a lot of times their character got questioned for going. And it's one of those things where if you go visit, you know, the president, you hate America, or you hate, you know, or more specifically hate, you know, American people. Or if you don't go, you hate America in general. So really, it does. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But I think, yeah, eventually, probably, I would be surprised if Trump just doesn't have invite teams all together. I'm sure the Golden State one, if Golden State wins, I'm sure it's going to be the same old dialogue. These guys aren't going to be meeting up anytime soon. So, whatever. Now, moving on to Pitt. Jeff Capel's been tearing it up. He lands on our top 150 player in Audis Tony. I believe he's a shooting guard. So Pitt's stacking up in the backcourt. I would love for them to get a big man, but I don't think it's going to happen this class. And I think Capel realizes, you know, this, you know, they're not really going anywhere. You know, he's going to build a team. Let's see where these guys, how these guys mesh. And of course, he's gonna probably set up for next class. But anyways, he's landed some really good players, and regardless, there's gonna be probably a lot more excitement than what you saw last year. Anything more exciting than that? What we saw. I mean, that team did give us their moments, but going winless in ACC really didn't help things. And on the flip side, Pitt football still hasn't really landed anybody recruiting-wise, although they did land a tight end. He's a grad transfer that's going to play. He can play immediately. By the name of Will Gregg, who played at Arkansas. And he was one of the top tight ends in the nation when he was recruited. He played in 10 games last year for Arkansas. So he's got some game experience. This is actually a big get for Pitt. Well, you hope it is. I mean, on paper it is, but Pitt needs help at tight end. after Chris Clark was has been gone, probably not coming back. Although I don't see Chris Clark much of a loss because he really didn't contribute much anyway, and when he did, it wasn't all that great. I think his only touchdown was against Rice, but nobody really stepped up in the tight end role this past year, and that was a big thing for that Pitt offense back in 2016, because Scott Orndorff, he gave Pitt that security blanket where guys weren't open, you dump it to him and he made things happen. Pitt needs that back. And of course, George Ashton's back as well. He was another one, another weapon Pitt missed. A fullback that can, block but also catch passes and out of the backfield, which is a rarity because you don't see that a lot. Although they did line up, who was that fullback for Pitt who they kept putting in motion all the time? Escapes my mind, but he did play for the Giants for a little bit. And it worked out for him. I mean, it was funny because he declared for the draft, I remember, and we thought it was all stupid, but of course, Todd Graham was taking over. And obviously, that's why he left, because fullbacks are pretty much useless in that type of offense that Todd Graham runs. The high-octane speed. But it worked out for him. I mean, he got a Super Bowl ring, made some big plays in the Super Bowl. I think he recovered 2 fumbles in the Super Bowl. But he saw some time. I mean, it worked out for him. He probably got some NFL paychecks. I'm sure he hoped he invested some of it or saved it. But, yeah. Of course, we also... Who else did we have? Cormorant Collins was a decent fullback. I wish they would have gave him the ball more running-wise. I thought he was a good runner, too. He was a steal that Dave wants that just landed out of nowhere, I remember, in the 2004 class. That was 2005 class. Which would have been part of Walt Harris's last class. I remember Dave took that class over, and he landed that guy, and he was a 4-star fullback. I mean, that day we were seeing the recruiting prowess of Wani, so to speak. So, one of my themes of today is going over the top games and the history of Pitt football. Not history, but mainly 2000 on. That's where I wanted to start. That's pretty much what I've been focusing on a lot of things on these lists. But, going from 2000 to present, your top game is obviously going to be 13-9 Pitt West Virginia 2007. The Clemson game was a huge win, but Clemson recovered and won the national title. But still, it was a big win. You put that, that's probably number two. Number one's going to be 13-9 for obvious reasons. It's your rival. They need to beat you to go to the BCS title game. And Pitt's defense beat that ass. And all Pitt needed to do was score at least 13 points. It was a miracle we even got in the end zone in that game, to be honest. But, as far as that went, I think it was when we had the fumble recovery from the kickoff, and I believe we did a fake punt where Shane Murray just ran it up the middle. Then Odair Turner made a nice catch from a really bad Bostic throw, and it set up Pat Bostic from the 1 yard line. Yeah, the only way we were really going to get in the end zone that day is if we had a short field, because we couldn't do anything. We couldn't really do much of anything else. We We couldn't run shit until his legs fell off, and of course he did get us to the end zone at one point. But of course, it was called back on a bad hold, on a phantom holding call. One of the many calls the Big East officials made to try to screw us, and that was pretty bad. No matter how badly they tried to screw us, we still won the game. And after that, pretty much the Big East went up in flames because Rich Roy left, and we had to rely on Cincinnati to hold the flag for us the next few years because we couldn't finish the damn job. And UConn, too. Cincinnati UConn carried the flag for us in the BCS title games because we couldn't get the job done. You know, we lost a whole bunch, you know, and we were in that position, you know, to win the Big East. Would have been once that's final year, and we still screwed up. Yep. But yeah, that's your top win. Clemson, obviously, number two. Miami, the number two Miami game, probably number three, because, you know, Miami at the time was undefeated and ranked second in the nation. And people thought it was the U, you know, the U was back, and then Pitt just, you know, Pitt dominated them. Because a lot of times it didn't matter how down Miami was, they always beat us in some way, some shape or form. We did beat them recently, you know, when they had Al Golden. And I think we lost them the year they fired Al Golden. If they probably would have kept him, we probably would have beat them another time. But they got, you know, a new coach, an interim coach at the time, and it was a new jolt. You know, other games that are on that list, obviously Virginia Tech, the Virginia Tech games, 2001, 2002, 2003. 2001 came out of nowhere because Pitt started off 1-5 that year, and Walt, I guess, decided to scrap that spread offense that he tried so desperately to run, which to this day I still don't get, because that team could have contended for the Big East that year had he not decided to change that offense up and just left it the way it was. But Walt obviously had an issue. Walt had a tendency to outcoach himself and outthink himself. And at that point, he outthought himself. So he flipped it back, simplified it. Pitt went on the win out. Again, the Virginia Tech game, this was their first year without Mike Vick, but they were still a good football team, a damn good team. Pitt just came out of nowhere in that game, and they just destroyed them. I think it was 31-7 or 38-7, one of the two. I mean, they just totally dilapidated them. You know, Pitt won 5 straight, and they went to the Tangerine Bowl and won their 6 straight. Beat Phillip Rivers, NC State. 2002, Tech wanted revenge, so we went to Blacksburg at night. Tech was nationally ranked. Really good team still. But they had Brian Randall as a quarterback. And I never fully bought in the Virginia Tech because they were hoping Randall was going to be this next coming Mike Vick because he was mobile. But he was a horrible thrower. He couldn't read coverages either. I watched him against BC earlier in that year. He had all this hype, but really, he wasn't really that good. Pitt won 28-21. It was a huge game. Larry Fitzgerald had a huge coming out party. That 2002 team should have won more than 9 games that year. They let some games slip. West Virginia, for sure, they let slip by their hands. That was a game they could have won, should have won, but it was one of those games where they just pitted. Miami, they could have won that game too. I like I said, you know, one thing that killed him was that Willis McGahee run before halftime. And, of course, that opportunity is in the second half, and they just couldn't do it. And then they went. Then they got down to the goal line, and Rutherford threw it over Yogi Ross' head. In 2003, obviously, Tech came to Hines, and Pitt was still in the hunt for the Big East title, and Pitt won in the final seconds. Well, not really final seconds, more like the final minute. And Marcus Vick threw a pick on the next drive. So those three, you know, those Tech games were fun games, big games. And then you have Notre Dame games as well. You have 2004 ND, where Pelka throws five touchdown passes at South Bend, drops the F-bomb. And that was kind of like the turning point for Pitt season. They went to the Fiesta Bowl. Then years, maybe like 5 years later, 2009. Then a bit, you know, Pitt was about on the verge of the top 10. Then they faced Charlie Weiss. His group. They had Jimmy Clausen, who was a senior quarterback, and he was really good at, you know, QB. But Charlie Weiss was their coach, so that was their big issue. Pitt won that game as well. And plus, you had years later, you had the game where Tom Savage was a quarterback, and that was, I think, 2012, I believe. In 2012, 2013, it was the first year for Paul Christ. And Savage played a hell of a game, and he had some really good players. He had Boyd and Street. They had nice games, and not to mention Pitt's secondary had a hell of a game. Guys like Vinopol had some picks. So you had those games. Of course, you had the Penn State games as well. You have the 2016 Penn State game, obviously. And Pitt, that game should have been as close as it was, but the problem is Pitt didn't really have much of a passing game at that point. Glennon established it. And plus, Pitt's defense wasn't all that great either. And they had to defend against Saquon Barkley, and then Trace McSorley somehow found his fire. And Penn State went on to win the Big Ten title that year, but that turned out to be a big win for Pitt because it kept Penn State out of the playoffs. The 2000 game will always be a big win for Pitt because it was their first win over Penn State since 1988. And it was one of those things where Pitt could never beat Penn State no matter what. Penn State was always going to be the better team. And Pitt won that game 12-0, and really the game they should have scored more points than what they did. Because that game wasn't really that close as people think. I don't think Penn State even crossed midfield against us. As far as I remember, there was something where Penn State didn't even cross, a certain part of territory against Pitt's defense. Pitt won in that game, and that was that. So you have all these games, but there are some hidden ones. Obviously, we don't talk about. There's a 2004 Pitt West Virginia game. The 1916 game, that pretty much got Pitt into the Fiesta Bowl. That was a big win. Because that was the year, supposedly, that was West Virginia's quote-unquote year, supposedly, that they were going to dominate because Miami and Virginia Tech left them. But people forget that West Virginia's QB was Rasheed Marshall, and he wasn't a bad QB, but he wasn't great. There was so much that guy could do. I mean, he wasn't all that good. I just remember that game, and Pitt's defense wasn't that good, and I always wondered why they weren't running the ball on us as much as they used to. Because 2003, they ran the ball on us, and with their spread offense, and they killed us. But this time around, it was a different story. It just Western had a little hype that year, and it just crumbled. But Josh Cummings nailed 3 field goals in that. And that swirling winter wind, which was probably one of the biggest things for Pitt that year. I mean, Cummings doesn't get talked much. I remember his dad on the message board used to bitch because nobody talked about his son a lot. His complaint was valid because they won a lot of games because of him. Although I remember him jumping on the boards when they lost to Syracuse because his son shanked a bunch of field goals. And I guess he was defending the hell out of his son because he knew his son was going to get blamed for losing that game. Because he had really one job, and it was to make field goals. And extra points, of course. But that was also a big game, big win for Pitt. Boston College that year was also a big win because BC was also vying for the Big East title, and Pitt won that game in overtime. I think they kicked the field goal on their possession, and then they forced a fumble to win the game. Yep, I remember that game well. I believe. They threw a pass over the middle, and as soon as he caught it, he got stripped. And Pitt won that game in overtime. It was another huge win. So, I mean, those are two other wins we forget about. And I'm sure there's more I'm forgetting about, but those ones ones that stick out. You could say a lot of wins during the first year to Narduzzi are huge. I mean, that Georgia Tech game when they won by with that late last second field goal. And I think Blewett nailed that. That was Blewett, I think, that hit that kick, I believe. But I just remember how that ball just curved at the last minute and just made its way in. I mean, that was a huge win because we always had a hard time against Georgia Tech, and there we had it. So, there goes another one. But, I would say it's during the Todd Graham era, there wasn't really, which was one season, there was much to talk about. Paul Christ era, we had some close ones. We should be, when Notre Dame was vying for the national title, we had a chance to beat them, but we couldn't put them away. And when it gets into the referee's hands, especially at South Bend, you're gonna lose every time. But all those wins I just showed you, I mean, those were big ones. I mean, you can even say Cincinnati 2007 was a big win because they were ranked. I mean, they were on the verge of being a really good team, and Pitt wasn't good at all. Pitt beat them. And Pat Bosick actually had a decent game in that game they played. He made some big throws, and defense played well. And plus, I think Shady and LaRod Stevens both had 100 yards rushing in that game. Because that's when, initially LaRod was the starter, but of course Shady took over, and for obvious reasons. But LaRod was a really good teammate. And LaRod, to his credit, got himself an NFL paycheck and spent a few seasons. I mean, I like LaRod Stevens. If he was a few inches taller, I think he would have been a, you know, he could have spent some time in the NFL a lot more than just returning kicks. He was really speedy, really shifty. I actually liked the Rod in the secondary. When I watched him in the Big 33 game, I thought he could have been a really big help in the secondary. Yeah, but he was, you know, he did have some explosion. He did. But anyways, guys, I'm out of here. I've given you guys a half hour. Good Lord. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff. But hell to pit. Bye.